Hi, this is Skip Lackey, and I was in the 1985 horror comedy film Once Bitten, and this is Chris and Scott with the Vampire Movie Minute podcast. Enjoy.
Welcome back to the last 5 minutes of the Vampire Movie Minute podcast coverage of Blade. I am your host, Dr. Chris.
I'm Jessica, and I'm joining Dr. Chris today from Arcane Echoes podcast on YouTube.
Awesome. Where she covers all sorts of weird, spooky, supernatural stuff, and you can hear an interview with her and me talking about Mercy Brown, the Rhode Island vampire, on an upcoming episode, and we will also be covering Elizabeth Bathory in a future episode as well, so stay tuned for that. But yes, these 5 minutes are Blade slashing at the camera and then credits.
The last 5 minutes, slashing at the camera in Moscow and credits. So we are left on a cliffhanger of Blade stopping a vampire from biting a Russian woman in the snow.
So our credits start rolling up through the film as we have our cool, badass techno music playing. What are some of the people in the credits that stand out to you?
Well, first and foremost, I think her name is pronounced Sanna Lathan, and she played Blade's mother. She definitely stands out to me just because she was so beautiful. So immediately I was looking for her, but, Chris Christofferson as well, because I had no idea who he was, kind of just looks like he lives in a sewer in New York or something, but he stood out. And then I looked into him further and realized that he was actually a country singer and pretty famous before he was in this movie. One is Udo Kier. I love his role in the movie as well, so he definitely stood out to me.
Yeah, Udo Kier has done a lot of things. He was in Andy Warhol's Dracula back in the 70s.
He just has such a unique look, and he fits that horror vampire role so well.
Stephen Norrington, who's the director of the film, would also be a vampire henchman in the movie. It's really sad, though, that the last film he directed was The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and he left Hollywood after that was a box office flop. It was the last film starring Sean Connery before he retired as well, based on the comic book by Alan Moore of the same name. It was a disaster. The production was a disaster, and him and Connery almost came to physical fighting blows.
Wow, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I guess there's a lot of frustration if you're not doing well.
Yeah, it's just really sad because he directed a bunch of cool stuff prior to this and worked on, he'd worked on Aliens and Hardware and Alien 3, and done a couple other great films, but yeah, it just, this was it for him, and he left the industry right afterwards.
Well, this movie in particular is really good. One of the comments I made when I was watching it again was how wonderfully produced it was, especially for that time. I mean, you look at movies today and then you compare them to this one, and this one was so incredibly good. All the scenes were good, and then I looked into the budget, and I think their budget was like 54 million or 45 million. I might be mixing the two numbers.
Crazy low.
Yeah, that's so low, especially when you're looking at what movies are today, and it was so good. Everything was good. Maybe I was just distracted by the cast and just the action, but I feel like everything just fits so well, especially with the location, what it was supposed to look like. All of it just blended into each other so well.
One of the other people that stood out to me was Jane English. She worked on this film as well as puppetry and makeup artist for several films that I caught her name in multiple times. I think I've run into her at a convention. She worked on LA Confidential, The Sentinel, The Mist, and all three of the 50 Shades films as makeup for the actresses and actors when they're nude.
Interesting.
Yeah, because of course, if you're fully nude, you should probably have some makeup on to cover up anything that might not look great in a sex scene.
Well, see, but it's not so silly because humans. I mean, that's. I can go off on a tangent another.
Right, but this is the erotic fiction thing. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't understand. They don't always cover up adult film stars, but this is very different. This is the big Hollywood erotic, mommy's porn, basically, as I've always called it. you know, there's so many prop masters and storyboard artists that work in this movie. One of them I want to point out is Arthur Lee. He was a storyboard artist on this, but also went to work on Hellboy and had worked on several of the animated films in the DC library, such as the Death of Superman, Reign of the Superman, Justice Society World War II, Batman the Long Halloween, Green Lantern, Legion of Superheroes, Justice League War World, and the Justice League Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 1, as well as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the Harley Quinn animated series, the Batman Unlimited animated series. So he went from being like a story designer for live-action movies to just being a designer for animation afterwards, because... you know, art direction obviously would go there. I mean, his stuff is in, goes on and on and on. Multiple Scooby-Doo animated films, the Spectacular Spider-Man animated series, the couple of the Transformer animated series. So, like, you know, getting that is great work if you can get it, especially if you can draw.
Yeah.
Because again, storyboard artist work,
resume.
Storyboard artwork is basically comic book artwork. It's the blocks that you see on a poster board of how the film's gonna look before they start filming it.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that really matters, right? The cover matters so much because that's what brings people in.
Right. Definitely. One of the funniest things that the commentary that Wesley Snipes is on here is he credits himself as creating the character of Blade. And I'm like, I think Marv Wolfman and Gene Cullen would have something different to say about that, Mr. Snipes.
Yeah. I mean, you could say he made it household name of that era, or he brought the vision to life, but he definitely did not create the character.
No.
I would be the person who actually wrote the character, who created the character.
Did you catch Blade's appearance in Deadpool and Wolverine?
No, I have not seen Deadpool. All right. And it's been a very long time.
Deadpool and Wolverine in 2024, Wesley Snipes returned to play Blade in it.
Oh, I love that. I love Wesley Snipes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, you should go watch that movie. He's in it. He is Blade. He even looks at the camera and goes, "There'll only ever be one Blade." Of course, this is a wink and a nod to the fact that Marvel has not been able to get a Blade movie going. They announced a Blade movie back in like 2018, and we have never seen it. It was supposed to star Mahershala Ali, and we've seen nothing. Now, Blade obviously has two sequels and the television series, which you can go over to the Dead TV podcast, which I co-host with a couple of different co-hosts, and look at my coverage of the Blade TV show. We have interviews with the actors from that show. The actor who played Blade on that is Kirk Sticky Smith Jones, a rapper, and his people wanted like $2,000 to do the interview.
Wow, that's
yeah,
a lot.
That's, I'm like, seriously, that's what? Okay, whatever. No, absolutely not. I'm trying to reach Wesley Snipes people to see if he'll come on this podcast to talk about it. Because obviously he's not done with Blade if he's going to play Blade as a cameo in a Deadpool movie.
Well, and he is Blade.
Yeah.
I agree with him. There is only one Blade. He is Blade.
It is Blade.
I just clicked over to the Blade TV show to look at the guy, and there's no way. He's not Blade.
I first introduced a Blade in the Marvel comic book Rise of the Midnight Suns, where a bunch of horror characters team up with Ghost Rider to fight a big bad villain. Then, on the Spider-Man animated series in the 90s, Blade shows up in the episode literally titled Blade the Vampire Hunter, and I went nuts. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Blade's gonna team up with Spider-Man to fight Morbius? Because Morbius is a Spider-Man villain. And you're like... what? That is crazy. Oh my god, it was great. For two episodes, Blade, Spider-Man team up to take out Morbius the Living Vampire. You get his origin story from Whistler, who gives it to like this cop and Peter Parker, being like, Blade was the the offshoot of a mother who fell in love with a vampire and she got bitten, and now he's got like super immunity, but he needs the serum and he hunts down vampires, and you're like, whoa, that's all I need to know about Blade as a kid. That's all
yeah.
I knew. So, and then when they... so Whistler also comes from that Spider-Man animated series, too. He wasn't a character in the comics.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So we're going to be jumping over in a month, too. Humanist Vampire Seeking Consenting Suicidal Person. Hopefully everyone can join us for that. Jessica will be on with me for a couple episodes of that once we start the production of it. It's a great Canadian horror vampire movie that came out in 2023. And I highly recommend everyone checking it out. Thank you for joining me for this episode, Jessica. Where can people find you?
You guys can find me on YouTube at Arcane Echoes Podcast.
And you can find me over on my regular show, Radio of Horror, where Jessica was a guest on. You can see our coverage of Mercy Brown. And then you can pick up my book, Vlada, A Dracula Tale, where we gender swap the entire cast of Dracula. You can find it on Etsy, Barnes & Noble, wherever comic books are sold, or, of course, on Amazon. Thank you, everyone. And this is our coverage of Blade here on the Vampire Movie Minute podcast.